I'm with Jonathan Feldstein from Genesis 123 Foundation. It's October the 7th, 1 year on. Today must be a very difficult day for all of Israel.
Terribly hard day today, Paul, and we've been building up to this. But I think one of the hardest parts, I was speaking with a friend yesterday, comparing to September 11th. The thing on September 11th is that it ended. And here we're a year in, and not only is the war with Hamas not over, we still have a very significant front in Lebanon. We continue to have soldiers and civilians killed, still 101 hostages who are being held in Gaza. And you and I and everyone else here in Israel is waiting for the shoe to drop with a retaliation response, proactive offensive measure against the Iranians. And all of that is scary and can trigger something yet much worse.
It really is inconceivable that there's still hostages in Gaza after a year, isn't it?
Yeah, we use the word inconceivable very freely in our language, but I think this is perhaps one of the most accurate definitions of that. It's inconceivable on a national level. It's inconceivable that they were taken hostage to begin with. It's inconceivable that the world, specifically the United States, hasn't truly led a forceful initiative that they all must be freed. And it's inconceivable for those who were alive and the families of everyone who's still there, dead or alive, because they haven't been able to have closure. And I don't know, I've spoken to, I'm sure you have too, a number of family members of hostages. I think if it were me, I'd be broken. And the strength and the resilience and even the hope that they exhibit is something that's inspiring to me, even at this tremendously difficult time.
It's a year on. Do you think the hostages have been forgotten about?
No, for sure the hostages have not been forgotten about. And fortunately, the Israeli public isn't allowing that. The one unfortunate thing from my perspective is the conflation between the imperative, and it is an imperative. Also, the soldiers know that they're fighting to free the hostages in Gaza, but the conflation of anti-government protests with freeing the hostages to me is a mistake. The hostages have not been forgotten, and I wouldn't want to be making any decisions, but there's still a war that must be conducted and won decisively. And the existence of hostages in Gaza, dead or alive, makes it very difficult for an army and a people that are truly ethical and have a moral obligation to bring everyone home.
You have a project called Root and Branch. Tell us about that.
This is one of the most exciting projects that I've done, Paul. I hope you'll be able to join us for a day. Beginning November 17th, we are bringing Christian volunteers, at the moment from all over the world, so modestly. It's a hard thing because we are still in a period of war and there are many people who are hesitant to book tickets. But we are bringing Christians to pick olives, which is an idea I credit to my good friend. I think you spoke to her, Marzi Amirizadeh, who was a Iranian woman born in Iran, became a Christian in Iran. And 15 years ago today, she was languishing in a Tehran prison, having been sentenced to death for the crime, they say, of converting to Christianity. And we've become good friends over the last couple of years. And just out of the blue, well before the war began, we were discussing the idea of what really can connect Christians with Israel. And we spoke about the olive and olive root and the branch. And that's why it's called Root and Branch. And it's funny because I understand, as an Orthodox Jew, the imperative from Romans 11, that the root supports the branch and not vice versa. And so we're bringing Christians to harvest olives. It only clicked after the war began, which, as you know, tens, hundreds of thousands of people in Israel came to Israel to help, to volunteer, to harvest all kinds of produce. But no one really worked on the olives, and the olives are probably the penultimate biblical fruit. And from which, when we refer to olive oil anywhere in the Bible, we're referring to olive oil. And of course, there's Romans 11. And so what we're doing beginning on November 17th for 10 days is bringing Christian volunteers to harvest olives, not just olive trees in the land of Israel, which is very meaningful as it is, but olive trees in the Gaza border area, in communities that today as we speak are mourning deeply the losses of dozens or hundreds of people. And we are going to go in and take the fruit from their trees that otherwise would simply fall to the ground and make oil from it, possibly other olive-related products, and provide from the profit resources back to these communities that we can help sustain them, Jews and Christians together. It's going to be a beautiful thing.
So this is actually basically being a blessing to that community that was devastated so much last year. And how was the olive harvest last year?
The olive harvest was very difficult last year because the harvest season begins right around now. It's October, November. And unlike fruit that's grown in a hothouse where you can control, it's got to be October, November. And you know this, right after the war began, tens of thousands, maybe more, foreign workers fled and just abandoned Israel and their jobs. On top of that, many of the foreign workers were Palestinian Arabs, most of whom, whether from Gaza or from Judea and Samaria, have not come back to their work. And so, and I learned this only very recently, visiting a farmer who lost his crop now 2 years in a row down in the Gaza border area. Many instances, olive trees don't provide fruit every year, only every other year. So the war, the inability to harvest, the ability to gather and actually make fruit and do so in a timely fashion, which is also critical in terms of making good quality olive oil, was lost last year, not just in the South, but also in the North, because we weren't physically at war on the ground with this kind of escalation, but the foreign workers who worked in these olive orchards also fled. And so we're bringing a restoration of that, and initially from public trees, but eventually, and this will just be our pilot year, we're going to learn a lot, we're going to film it, we're going to make promotional videos so that in subsequent years, we can fan out and go all over Israel and be a blessing with that providential fruit that is this is such the example that even Paul in Romans uses it to inform the Gentile church what the relationship with the Jewish people is and ought to be.
How important has it been over this past year for having volunteers here in the agriculture industry?
It's a great question, Paul. I read a month or two ago that over the course of the last year, more than $50 million was harvested as a result of volunteers pitching in. That's $50 million worth of oranges and pomelos and grapefruits and cucumbers and peppers and garlic and everything and cotton and everything in between that would have fallen to the ground, that would have rotted. And so much did. But that's really important because, as you also know, living here, prices of produce have gone up significantly. We're right. For some odd reason, we're now in a tomato shortage, and tomatoes have gone through the roof as far as their price. So it affects people. It affects not just you and me when we're buying a salad in a cafe, but it affects the livelihood of farmers. And it's not just the $50 million was harvested, entire crops were saved and the livelihoods of farmers in these communities, specifically in the Gaza border.
Now, Israel is still in war, but to come now at this time would be special and show real love and support for Israel and her people, wouldn't it?
It does indeed. And, you know, we are at war and no one's fooling anybody to pretend that we're not and that there's not risk here. The irony in all of this, where we will be harvesting a month and 10 days from now, beginning a month and 10 days, for 10 days, is along the Gaza border, which arguably is one of the safest places to be in Israel right now. But it's also important, especially this year, because when we go to Kibbutz Be'eri, we go to Kibbutz Kfar Aza, we go to Moshav Nativ Ha'asara, and we're not sure about Sderot, because while Sderot is a really substantial city and has hundreds of olive trees as landscape, most of those trees are not fruit bearing. But the important thing to know is that those who come this year will not just be harvesting olives, but beginning to make what we pray will be ongoing, lasting relationships. And they will have the privilege, not like as spectators in a zoo, but this may very well be the last year that people can come to these communities and actually see the physical devastation that was inflicted a year ago today. We're not doing that from a spectacle perspective, but we're doing that to bear witness. And therefore, we want as many people to come from overseas who can bear witness, who can understand firsthand through the interactions from the survivors and people who's hopefully by then all the hostages will be home and will speak to hostages who have been released and their family members. But whatever the situation is, it's going to be a very firsthand active process picking the olives and deliberately a very firsthand active experience engaging with the residents who a year ago, as we speak, were under a massive attack.
I've been with you down to that area, and it is very important to hear the stories, isn't it? To let them share, for us to be able to go back and take back those stories and tell other people.
You know, you're right. And as a journalist, you're very sensitive to that. I don't consider myself a journalist, but I write. I do my inspiration from Zion podcast. I've been very sensitive over the last year not to put these people, those whose families of those who were killed, those who have family members in Gaza, those who were released from Gaza. I've been very careful not to objectify them, but it is important for them. The more I'm with people in any of those categories, the more I find their call, the imperative for them to tell their stories. My last podcast last week was with a survivor from Kibbutz Be'eri, and he said, I have no more tears. I've cried all the tears. But he continues to tell the stories because the world needs to know. And he understands that now, in a post-October 27th, 23 world, that's by surviving, that is his responsibility.
Olive oil is very symbolic in the Bible. So to be part of the olive harvest at this time would be very, very special indeed, won't it?
It's, you know what? It's one of the most cool, innovative, impactful projects that I see. I don't know about other countries, but I don't know of any countries whose biggest cities are lined with olive trees along the main roads and in roundabouts. It's one of the seven biblical fruits here. And unlike all of the other fruits, olive oil, obviously oil is essential for cooking, and olive oil has other health benefits and many other things that can come out of olive oil. But the pulp that's used from olive oil, if you go back and learn a little bit of the Talmud, you actually learn that the pulp is used as fuel. So how amazing that we can squish olives and use the pulp and the pits from inside and create energy. And I think that that's also very symbolic of, yes, we know in Romans 11, Paul says that it's the root that supports the branch, but how amazing, simply how amazing, Paul, you, Paul, not the other Paul, that Christians coming here are the branch, and in this case, coming here to support the root.
I think Christians need to get involved with this. How can people find out more information?
Thank you for asking that. Everything is at the Genesis 123 Foundation website, which is genesis123.co. Come to genesis123.co, and we have a thumbnail where people can click and get information and be in direct touch with me. Oh, let me just say one last thing. It's so important. It is soon. By the time people are listening to this, it'll be just under a month and a half until everyone's scheduled to arrive. We are also offering subsidies. And that's really neat because we can make some, not everybody has $2,600 to plunk down right away on a 10-day trip plus finding airfare. But we offering a range of subsidies that can significantly reduce the price, if not possibly make it free. So please be in touch at genesis123.co. And Yeah, I would be thrilled to receive emails and inquiries and share all of the details and have. And I guess last thing to say is because of the military restrictions, we're only limited to 40 people. So one bus. So that bus is filling up, and anyone who's interested should definitely jump on board as soon as possible.
What is your prayer for Israel today?
Wow, Paul. We've experienced unparalleled terror and grief in the last year. And I pray that everybody, and it really is most Israelis, really most of us, that's not rhetoric, are traumatized and need healing in some way. And I'm praying for that healing. I'm praying that I'm wrong, that in 50 years, my children and grandchildren won't be as traumatized by the things that they've lived through and experienced. I'm praying that our neighbors, the people who we're fighting, will ultimately come to know the true God and actually realize that the Jewish people, the land of Israel, the state of Israel, are not enemies, but essential allies, biblically, theologically, and for their own prosperity. And I pray that we as a people will maintain some level of unity that's been so pronounced over the last year. It's slipping away. We're seeing political divisiveness. But I pray that however we go forward, even with things that divide us, that we remember to our core that we are one. The terrorists didn't discriminate between religious and non-religious, Ashkenazi and Sephardi, kibbutz and city, black and white. That we are one people, and we must continue to act as one people. And I pray that we will continue to see all of that.
Well, Jonathan, thank you very much for sharing today.
Thank you, Paul. Always a pleasure. My only shame is that we don't always get to do this in person.
Right.